Jenny, come and read to us from Numbers chapter 13. Slightly abridged.
Numbers chapter 13. The Lord said to Moses, send some men to explore the land of Canaan, which I am giving to the Israelites. From each ancestral tribe, send one of its leaders. So at the Lord's command, Moses sent them out from the desert of Paran. All of them were leaders of the Israelites. These are their names: Shamua, Shaphat, Caleb, Igal, Hoshea, Palti, Gadiel, Gadi, Amiel, Sesir, Nabi. These are the names of the men Moses sent to explore the land. Moses gave Hoshea, son of Nun, the name Joshua. When Moses sent them to explore Canaan, he said, go up through the Negev and on into the hill country. See what the land is like and whether the people who live there are strong or weak, few or many. What kind of land do they live in? Is it good or bad? What kind of towns do they live in? Are they unwalled or fortified? How is the soil? Is it fertile or poor? Are there trees on it or not? Do your best to bring back some of the fruit of the land. It was the season for the first ripe grapes. So they went up and explored the land from the desert of Zin as far as Rehob. When they reached the valley of Eshcol, they cut off a branch bearing a single cluster of grapes. Two of them carried it on a pole between them, along with some pomegranates and figs. That place was called the Valley of Eshcol, because of the cluster of grapes the Israelites cut off there. At the end of 40 days, they returned from exploring the land. They came back to Moses and Aaron and the whole Israelite community at Kadesh in the desert of Paran. There they reported to them and to the whole assembly and showed them the fruit of the land. They gave Moses this account. We went into the land to which you sent us, and it does flow with milk and honey. Here is its fruit. But the people who live there are powerful, and the cities are fortified and very large. We even saw descendants of Anak there. The Amalekites live in the Negev, the Hittites, Jebusites, and Amorites live in the hill country, and the Canaanites live near the sea and along the Jordan. Then Caleb silenced the people before Moses and said, we should go up and take possession of the land, for we can certainly do it. But the men who had gone up with him said, we can't attack those people. They are stronger than we are. And they spread among the Israelites a bad report about the land they had explored. They said, the land we explored devours those living in it. All the people we saw there are of great size. We saw the Nephilim there, the descendants of Anak come from the Nephilim. We seem like grasshoppers in our own eyes, and we look the same to them.
Thank you especially, because even with some parts taken out, there were an awful lot of names in that part. So thanks to Jenny for being up for that. Well, it was a sad story in many ways. And the lessons are obvious, aren't they, about following God rather than our own ideas, trusting him, looking for the good. But what does that mean for us in practice, in Britain, here, and in the wider world in 2016? Can you pop the PowerPoint up there, please, Ruth? So I think it's all about making choices and what we see. And the first question to ask is, which way do we go? How do we make the choices that we make? And I don't want to use the content of today's story to imply any particular judgment on the political scenario we face today. But there are some aspects that I do find very interesting. God had promised the people this land, a land that was flowing with milk and honey. And he's the king of the universe, and he's the one who's battling for them. But like that thing about hope we talked about earlier, they still have a part to play in thinking things through and working out the plan. And in the end, they had to form their own judgments on what lay ahead and make decisions. We today find ourselves in a complex situation that we, the people, have chosen. As individuals, given the information we had at our hands, we've sought to make the best choice that we can. And I imagine most of us are left with very complex feelings about the situation in which we now find ourselves. On another tack in our headlines this week, we've heard more about Tony Blair, who tried to learn what he could from the spies and intelligence about the situation in Iraq before committing us to war. I'm sure he didn't take the situation lightly, but the outcome still rumbles on and isn't what any of us would have hoped for. Difficult choices, difficult situations. And sometimes in our own lives we find ourselves with tough choices. Sometimes we know exactly what God is saying to us, but it may still be difficult to put those choices into operation. Sometimes it's costly, physically, emotionally, financially. We have the hard work to work out how that will come to pass in practice. My son and his wife and kids have moved to Newbury in the last year. They believed that God was calling them to be part of a new church plant that was happening, and the signs that that was God's will were just extremely clear in all sorts of ways. But the hassles that they have had and the trauma that they have had in getting there have just been beyond belief. They include the fact that it took insurance companies over 18 months to mend a house that got damaged in the storms that long ago. It includes the fact that eventually they had to put their house up for sale with no roof on it, and it sold. It includes the fact that for months they lived in a house with no roof, clambering over scaffold to get in and out, while insurers and scaffolders and building contractors argued and disagreed as to who was paying for what and how it was going to be done. It includes the fact that they then had to move into temporary rented accommodation for 9 months. And finally, they have moved into their own new house, but now have a court case resting on the folk who they rented from because they refused to give them back their deposit. And yet, the other side of the picture, I said to him on Friday, "Would you do it again? Are you glad you did it?" Oh, wow, the things we have seen and the way God has worked has been unimaginable. But it's tough sometimes. And the only way through it is to continue to find the positives in that and not to stay focused on the negatives. Other times when we've got choices to make, we really don't know what the right choice is. And all we can say to God is, "You show us. If we push the doors, then close them, if we're not meant to go through them, and trust that God will show us the way in that way." And sometimes, you know, I even believe that, like an encouraging parent, God just says, "I made you the person that I made you. You choose." That this isn't a fixed choice on my behalf. You choose. So, how do we choose which way? Difficult. But find... the right perspective. I'm not sure this is quite the right perspective. Bringing things down to size is one thing. minimising them completely is perhaps not the best perspective, especially perhaps if it's debt and things like that, that people will say, well, it will be all right in the end, without facing reality. But what's your perspective? Those pictures we looked at earlier, well, there was no right and wrong way. They were just different ways of looking at things. I wonder if you're a glass half full or a glass half empty person. And I have to admit that psychologically, probably most of us tend to be one way or the other. But sometimes we need to look at life differently. At this time, in our world, in our nation, in our church, in our homes, what's going to be our focus? Are we going to focus on all the negatives? Are we going to go down the path with all the media about how terrible this is all going to be for us? Or are we going to say, let's find the good that we can. Let's help people around us focus on the good stuff that is still going on, or some of the good aspects that could come out of this, rather than taking us on a downward spiral. Sometimes I think when you get into a community, a little group, or even a big group, even a whole country, we can actually become, in a sense, what we dream, what we think is going to happen is almost what we create. Through our negative attitude, we can actually escalate that. Can we be game changers who will actually find positive things to say when people come to us and say, oh, it's going to be terrible, this is going to happen, that's going to happen. Well, maybe it's not. Let's slow things down. Let's find some good stuff. Can we be a positive influence today? Amongst our work colleagues, our neighbours, our friends, our family, helping them to face the future with hope. And if we're going to do that, then where are the resources that we need? I thought this was quite a good picture, really, putting a jigsaw puzzle together, that actually you need the manpower, you need the financial resources. There's somebody there who wants a bit of history and to remember what's gone before. We need time and we need ideas. And that's true for all those things I've just been talking about. But I wonder whether it's true for our church at the moment too. Now we've begun to finalise the vision for this church. How do we move forward to bring life and hope to those around us? In what ways do we need to spy out this land around us? And determine the resources that we need so that this church can grow and God's kingdom can grow. How are we going to view us as individuals and as a church? Are we going to be facing a giant of a situation? Or are we going to be strategically planning to move forward into what God, we believe God has for us? So, making decisions about choices in all sorts of areas of life. But what perspective will we bring? Will we deliberately turn our minds to bring hope, to see things as glass half full? Where are the resources that we need? We need friends and colleagues as well. If we're going to be people of hope, then we will need people to encourage us and support us in getting together and just enabling those things to happen, because we can't do that as individuals in a vacuum. We'll just dry up. So, let's say together, do not conform to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Then you will be able to test and approve what God's will is, his good, pleasing, and perfect will. So we're going to sing. We're going to sing our intercessions, effectively, because we're going to sing that song of Graham Kendrick's that talks about asking God to bring beauty for brokenness, hope for despair. Lord, in your suffering world, this is your prayer. There's so much around this week, isn't there? Not only politically for us, but all the stuff that's going on in the States with the shootings and so many more things. Let's sing together.